This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm William Lee Adams, and in this episode of What in the World, we're looking at how older reality TV shows have aged. We're a daily podcast that breaks down big news stories, but we also chat about things like entertainment, music, and health. If you're a reality TV show junkie like me, then you probably know your Survivors from your Bachelors and your Top Models from your Real Housewives. Those franchises have been stirring controversy for years, and now there's a new show in the mix, Beast Games. It comes from the YouTuber Mr. Beast. 1,000 contestants battled in physical, mental, and social challenges for $5 million. Now, some of these contestants have complained that they didn't receive enough food and that they endured, in their words, emotional distress. Now, Mr. Beast, writing on social media, he said that these claims are blown out of proportion. It's not exactly surprising that scandal is surrounding another reality TV show. After all, controversy and reality TV, they go together like a Real Housewife and lip filler, and let's just say not everything ages well. So on today's episode, we're going behind the scenes of reality TV. We're going to speak to an academic and author who focuses on reality TV, and we're going to speak to some former contestants. You got the fashion. All right, here to shake up your reality is Danielle Lindemann. She is a professor at Lehigh University in the United States. Danielle, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So in your bio, you say that you like really, really trashy reality television. If you sort of stick your hand in the trash pile, what show would you like to pull out?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, I think my favorite reality show of all time is RuPaul's Drag Race, although I don't know how trashy that is.
So many great redemption narratives on that show. Queens who slip, but they stand up and they slay. I am Teen Danielle on this one. Now, in the beginning, God created the earth, and then someone came along and they invented reality TV. Could you tell us, what's the genesis of reality TV?
Yeah, that's such a good question. There's sort of some contention around that. So some people will pinpoint, you know, its roots in documentary. Others will point to the dating shows and quiz shows of the 1950s and 1960s, kind of the root of reality TV. A lot of people will point to MTV's The Real World, which started airing in the early 1990s. That was really the first show that introduced us to a lot of the conventions of reality TV that we see today. Most people would agree that Survivor was the show that just changed everything because it was on network TV. Everybody was watching that first season of Survivor, and it paid for itself in advertisements before it even aired. So this was the first kind of hint of what a juggernaut reality television could be and how popular it could be.
And so many of the shows that you just named, you know, The Real World on MTV, they also had Laguna Beach, The Hills, and of course, Survivor. There's sort of a soap opera element to all of them where the smallest slight can be blown up into this huge drama. I'm curious, from the network perspective, was there a practical reason that these shows were considered successful? You know, beyond earning money, was it easy to make?
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, one of the reasons reality TV exists and has endured is because of that kind of cost benefit, right? Reality TV shows generally are pretty cheap to produce. Oftentimes, you don't have to pay the people who appear on them, although sometimes you do. You don't have to build sets sometimes. Oftentimes, the crews are not paid union wages, so they can be very quick and cheap to produce, and then they have a huge audience. A lot of people are consuming them.
And one of my favorite shows is The Real Housewives of Atlanta. I don't know if you're a fan.
Yeah.
But these women
have all the Real Housewives.
And that's the thing. They do feel real, right? You can find someone to identify with. Like Nini Leakes famously said, I'm on a spiritual journey and I'm flying first class. And you've got Kenya Moore who says, you're always living the moment if you are the moment. There's some kind of aspirational quality there. Do you think that people are watching because they want to be these stars? Do they see themselves in these stars?
Yeah, I think it's a nuanced and complex relationship because, yes, reality TV tends to traffic in these kind of broad archetypal categories. I'm sure we can think of a lot of shows that do that. The Real Housewives, even The Bachelor, right? Usually there's some sort of contestant you can point to and say, oh, that person is the most like me, right? That person is the smart one or the shy one or the pretty one. There's sort of somebody you can grab onto and say, okay, I can see myself in that character, or that person on the screen. So there is that, but at the same time, we also watch these shows to kind of, for the train wreck factor, right? To kind of symbolically distance ourselves from the people on the screen and say, well, yeah, that person might be a little like me, but I mean, at least my life isn't screwed up like the people who are appearing on The Bachelor, right? We kind of feel a sense of smug satisfaction in comparing ourselves to the people on the screen.
You know, when we talk about university, the academy, people say one of the benefits is you meet people who are not like you. On America's Next Top Model, you had Robin, a conservative Christian who did not want to pose nude. And then you had Elise, an atheist, who was happy to pose nude. And then conflict kind of unfurled from there. Do you see a benefit in bringing together people from completely different worlds, even if the motive is to create conflict?
I mean, people often look at, you know, the dark side of reality TV and how problematic it can be, and that's absolutely valid. But I think we can look at some of the good that reality TV has done as well, you know, especially in terms of, I would say, LGBTQ representation. Shows like The Real World were, you know, telling LGBTQ stories long before we were really seeing them on scripted TV. Someone like, I think the most obvious example is Pedro Zamora, which is, you know, maybe people today don't know who that is, but at the time it was a really big deal. He was on the San Francisco season of The Real World in the mid-90s, and he was a gay man. He was living with AIDS. He had a commitment ceremony to his partner on the show. This was a really big deal at the time, so much so that when he ultimately passed away, the then President Bill Clinton said, you know, he was really the first gay person and the first person living with AIDS that many of us kind of got to know. And so I do think that there is a benefit to the representation that we see on reality TV. It is more diverse and historically has been more diverse than scripted television, both in terms of sexuality, in terms of gender, in terms of race. But of course, you know, we have to have the asterisks because some of those representations can be deeply problematic. But I do think there is something to be said for representation.
And these reality shows, of course, are meant to reflect reality in some way. They're born of their times. You know, they reflect the zeitgeist. And looking back on them, they can be really problematic. They haven't aged well. And I want to point to America's Next Top Model. If you search for a video called Ways America's Next Top Model Has Aged Badly, you'll get some interesting results. And one of the challenges on this modeling contest was having contestants portray people of other races. So white people portraying African Americans, African Americans portraying East Asian people. Looking back, it's very, very insensitive. Can you think of any other examples of shows that haven't aged well?
Sure. Yeah. They did that challenge twice on America's Next Top Model, so they did not learn their lesson. I mean, people always point to The Swan as a classic example. If you don't know, this was an early 2000s show where they took women who were supposed ugly ducklings and they gave them all plastic surgery and like radically remade their bodies, and they all kind of came out looking the same. I think that was a bridge too far for a lot of people. I would guess that a show like that would not air today.
And we're actually going to pause for a moment because we have a clip. She was a contestant on The Swan. She's going to share her experience.
Hello, my name is Tanya Parada. They asked me what two things I would change with plastic surgery if I had the opportunity, the money, and what to do. And the two things I said is that I would like a beautiful smile. At the time, I am my teeth were really small, and when I smiled, it just didn't show. So I didn't smile a lot with my teeth. And so I thought I would like some veneers, and I would also like some liposuction. They wanted to do a tummy tuck, a brow lift, a facelift, a nose job. They wanted to go in and do something to my cheeks to push them up to make them more higher. It was pretty traumatic when I found that out. I didn't really want to go in there and for 3 months be in LA and be nothing in procedures. I knew the dangers of it. That's why I was a little hesitant. I don't have any regrets about doing the show. I made so many close friends. It helped me get enough confidence so when I did come back to Colorado, I did secure a job.
And Danielle, The Swan was canceled. It was hugely controversial. People said you called them ugly ducklings. That's almost misogynist. You subjected them to all this surgery, which in many cases may be irreversible. Why do you think a show like that hasn't been attempted since then?
I mean, because I think for all the reasons you mentioned, right, because there was so much public outcry, even though other shows do involve makeovers that are almost as extreme as the ones on The Swan, this was just a bridge too far. Just everything together, right? Like you said, misogynistically referring to the women as ugly ducklings, really having them go under the knife in these dangerous procedures, and all of it together. But I think elements of those have persisted on other reality shows. There are plenty of makeover reality television shows, for instance. But I just think that entire like ball of terribleness that was The Swan, I don't see that being duplicated. The other show that I'm thinking of is actually a British show. Are you familiar with There's Something About Miriam? This was 2004. Again, the early 2000s were kind of a wild time for reality TV. But this was a show where they had a transgender woman and these men were competing for her romantically, but they did not know that she was transgender. They thought she was a cisgender woman. And then at the end of the show, there was like the big reveal where she came out as transgendered, obviously super transphobic and problematic. And I don't think a show like that would air today. Even at the time, I think there were lawsuits filed because of this show. We've probably moved past airing a show like that.
Miriam was sadly found dead in Mexico in 2019, and while her death was years after the show, people do talk about the fact that an experience on a reality program can color someone's future. One show that's been under the spotlight is America's Next Top Model and its host, Tyra Banks. There have been academics who have suggested that perhaps she was harder on African-American contestants than she was on white contestants, as with Tiffany, the famous viral clip of her saying, "We were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you." Do you think there's anything in that?
I think there was this kind of sense that she wanted them to fit a particular mold. The framing of Tiffany on that show was really interesting because they framed her as being like a certain type of unacceptable African-American woman. And Tyra was kind of shown as trying to like move her into a mold that would like be more socially acceptable, which is really problematic in a lot of ways. And I think at the time, a lot of people just kind of it didn't register as deeply problematic at the time. I know we can look back and say, how did these things not register? And I think part of it was because, you know, Tyra herself is African-American. So I would think and hope that if it were like a white man who was the judge of the show and doing the same things that Tyra did, there would have been more outcry.
In 2020, during the pandemic, a lot of the more insensitive clips from America's Next Top Model started resurfacing online. Among the clips were those of Danielle having the gap in her teeth widened, photo shoots where girls were asked to portray women of other races, and comments towards Tiffany Richardson, "We were all rooting for you." Now, that prompted Tyra to issue a statement on social media. She said, quote, "Been seeing the post about the insensitivity of some past ANTM moments, and I agree with you. Looking back, those were some really off choices. Appreciate your honest feedback, and am sending so much love and virtual hugs." And Ken Mock, one of the show's producers, he replied to that statement on social media saying this, Quote, I look at some of those ANTM moments and cringe. Just a FYI, the entire creative team made the choices in those shows, not just Tyra. So please feel free to yell at me for some of the worst moments in ANTM history. Apologies to all. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. We're looking at reality TV and why some shows haven't aged as well.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme. Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm William Lee Adams, and this is What in the World. I want to bring in Anjali Preston now. She is a broadcaster and a journalist in New York. She first came to the public's attention in 2010 when she competed on America's Next Top Model. She returned a year later for the All-Stars edition, and she won it all. But producers then stripped her of her title after it emerged that she had worked briefly as an escort. Anjali, hello.
Hi, William.
Good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
That was a really, really good intro. I like it.
Oh, thank you. And I'm sorry for any awkwardness. So let's just address that elephant in the room. You know, that incident where your title was stripped from you. How do you reflect on that now?
Just going through it, I realized that this isn't something I should be ashamed of. And I feel like that I was wrong. You know, like they took my stuff away from me because I made a mistake. We all make mistakes. I just feel like it was wrong how they went about it. I was scared about what people would think about me and judge me. But then I was like, why do I care what people think? I just wanted people to know, like, I was the real winner. It was me.
There's been a lot of talk, some of it in academia, that perhaps Tyra Banks is harsher on Black contestants than white contestants. Do you think there's anything to that?
I feel like that Tyra was not very helpful to the urban girls, the urban Black girls. To this day, I don't understand why, but it doesn't bother me. This is just something that I've noticed. If you watch the previous cycles and you see all the girls who are labeled as urban, as ghetto, as rough around the edges, they'll probably tell you, no, she didn't help me after the show.
When you hear the theme tune to Top Model these days, when it's on in the background, does it elicit fear, joy, a combination of both?
Sometimes when I hear it, I'm like, I smile and I'm like, I can't believe I was a part of something historic, you know, something iconic. It was one of the first reality shows in a time when there weren't many reality shows on TV. But then also when I hear it, I'm like, oh, Lord. But for the most part, it's happy thoughts. Me and my niece actually started to binge watch the episodes that I was on. But we cut those off real quick because she was looking at me like I was crazy. And I was like, I can't believe I didn't said some of that stuff.
A final question for you. People now look back on episodes and say that's deeply culturally insensitive. This hasn't aged well. At the time when you were participating, did anything seem insensitive or was it just sort of accepted? It was part of the time you were living in back then.
I think it was a part of the time that we were living in because now it's like, oh my God, like you would never have someone change their race, right? It wasn't on my cycle, but there was like this shoot where they changed ethnicities and, you know, such and such is going to be an indigenous woman. And then this person's going to be an African-American woman. Me as a viewer at the time, I thought it was cool. Like I was like, oh, this is dope. Only because me being a lighter skinned, a mixed woman, but I'm a Black woman, like I identify as a Black woman, that's who I am. I've always been told, you know, you look ethnically ambiguous. But just for me, I just looked at it like it was like, dang, that's cool. Oh, my God. And it's that's creative. Do I think it's problematic? Of course, yeah. Looking back on it, yeah, a lot of the stuff were a bit, you know, troublesome. Now we hold people accountable for their actions and for things that in the past we didn't, you know? And I think also there is probably a little bit of taboo that you couldn't say this or couldn't do this back then because you didn't want to upset the stat quo.
Well, Anjali, let me just say this. I have one photo in my hands, and it goes to the girl who originally won America's Next Top Model All-Stars. Thank you so much for joining us. We talk a lot about inappropriate behavior with reality TV. There's been criticism, you know, contestants aren't looked after, producers are maybe treating people like they're circus acts. You know, that's happened in the past. Is there a specific incident that you think's galvanized change?
Well, I think, okay, so I think, you know, especially in the United States, post George Floyd's murder, so he was a black man who was murdered by a police officer, it was, you know, on tape. And, you know, the protests around his murder combined with the Me Too movement. I think in the wake of those things, we have seen movement on the reality TV front. Although I will say, I mean, so a show like Cops, for instance, which was canceled in the wake of George Floyd, bounced back a year later on a different network.
Danielle, we're going to come back to you in a minute, but first, I want to hear from a contestant on a more recent reality show. Reality contestants often find themselves in difficult situations, and some of them, they decide it's not worth sticking around. In Nigeria, Big Brother Naija is one of the biggest shows on television, and it can turn people into celebrities overnight. In 2021, a contestant named Mr. KV decided to walk out after experiencing what he described as a mental breakdown.
I never saw myself in front of the camera. I was used to be behind the camera, you know, all my life. Big Brother happened, I was in front of the camera, like, had anxiety from that, like, It was a new thing to me. It was a bit, I mean, stressful. I was kind of like feeling that I was having some sort of, you know, mental, you know, stress, basically. I was not having enough sleep, headaches, and I was already feeling sick, and I went to tell them that I need to leave now. Like, I actually need to leave because, you know, I need to go take care of myself, basically. It's just like when people are walking, and you're overstressing yourself on work, and you just want to keep doing it, but you need to take a rest. The doctor told me, oh, look, you know, you just suffered an anxiety attack. There's a lot of misconception about when you just mention mental in Nigeria, everybody just thinks, oh, this guy's mad.
Thank you, Mr. KV. Now, just to be clear, BB Naija has said that it always does its best to protect the mental and physical health of its contestants. And Mr. KV told me directly that producers assisted him immediately after he went to them with his problems, and they provided on-site medical care. Danielle, we are in 2025 now. Is there any show you think that typifies the future of reality TV, or at least will define the genre for the next few years?
Oh, any show that typifies the future. You know, it's interesting because I think the future of reality TV is not these episodic network shows. They still persist, but we're moving more toward, you know, the TikTokers, the influencers. I don't know if people would consider that to be reality TV, but it's certainly reality TV adjacent. TikTok, YouTube, right? The influencers, even Peloton instructors who people are following. I think that those kind of DIY reality shows, I think those are going to be the future of reality TV.
If you could be on any reality show, what would it be?
I think, you know, The Traitors. I just love that show. And so I would, to be able to spend like a week with like Alan Cumming in the Scottish countryside, you'd have to sign me up.
Danielle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm William Lee Adams, and you've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. For more episodes like this, just search BBC What in the World wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme. Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.